Case number 21-5170, Mark McAfee and Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, appellants versus United States Food and Drug Administration. Mr. Subbaraman for the appellants, Ms. Barmore for the appellate.
Good morning, counsel. Mr. Subbaraman, please proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mahesha Subbaraman. It's my privilege to represent plaintiff appellants in this matter. Together with me at counsel's table is appellant Mark McAfee, and also with me is Alexia Kulwick, executive director of appellant Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. This case is about whether Congress has given FDA the power to say that butter can only be made from pasteurized milk or cream, thus banning interstate commerce in butter made from raw milk or cream the way that butter has been made for millennia. The answer is no. Butter holds a special place under federal law. Since the late 1800s, Congress has reserved to itself sole jurisdiction to determine the content of butter. Congress has thereby affirmed that butter regulation is a matter of vast economic and political significance. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act expressly states that FDA may not pronounce a standard of identity for butter. The Butter Standards Act, in turn, expressly authorizes trade in butter made from milk or cream or both without any pasteurization mandate. Against this reality, FDA argues that the Public Health Service Act gives FDA virtually unlimited authority to prevent foodborne illness. FDA skips past 42 USC 262G, part of the Public Health Service Act, which says that nothing in the act shall be construed in any way to affect or supersede the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Now, the court should reject FDA's overbroad reading of the Public Health Service Act for three basic reasons. First, FDA does not dispute that under its position, FDA could abrogate the Butter Standards Act wholesale. For example, the Butter Standards Act allows butter to be made with or without common salt. Under FDA's view, however, it could ban all unsalted butter nationwide tomorrow if FDA reached the conclusion that salted butter reduced the risk of foodborne illness because of salt's antibacterial properties. Second, FDA does not dispute that its position cannot be squared with the legislative history of the Public Health Services Act, which makes plain that Congress understood milk sanitation to be an issue requiring a separate law or an amendment of the PHSA. Third and finally, FDA does not dispute that its position would afford FDA virtually unlimited power to permanently ban any fresh, unprocessed food to reduce the risk of foodborne illness. In one fell stroke, FDA could ban fresh lettuce, raw oysters, cantaloupes, the list goes on and on. That kind of power requires a clear statement from Congress.
But don't we want the FDA to have the authority to ban where there's evidence of adulteration? For example, I take your brief to argue that the FDA could, under its authority to prevent the marketing of adulterated food, prevent the sale of butter made with adulterated milk.
That's correct, Your Honor. And it's important to recognize that the adulteration authority under 21 U.S.C. 342 has its expanse and it has its limits. One of the limits is that FDA has to prove adulteration on a case-by-case basis. It has to show that the butter is made from adulterated ingredients or that it's unfit for food. And that's the way FDA has enforced its authority for decades in federal courts.
There is a requirement of grounds under the Public Health Service Act as well. I guess I'm just trying to get at why, if regulation of the Public Health Service Act alters the standard of identity, wouldn't the same logic mean that prohibiting butter made with adulterated milk also be in conflict with butter's standard of identity? Because it's not incorporated into that standard of identity, which I take it to be the nub of your argument.
So it's important to recognize that food can be adulterated without violating a standard of identity. The standard of identity, in principal part, dictates the ingredients of food. It says, for example, for butter, it has to be made from milk or cream. Now, if FDA investigates a particular butter-making facility and it finds that the milk or cream that is being used in that facility has some form of tainted food product in it or bacteria or whatever, then FDA can commence food seizure proceedings and injunction proceedings to address that particular threat. It's not changing the standard of identity in terms of saying this has to be made from something different. It's saying that what you have made violates this separate provision.
So under your hypothetical about the banning of salted butter, you're not disputing that the FDA could ban the sale of salted butter if it had reason to believe that the relevant supply of salt was itself something other than salt or in some way dangerous.
If you could prove in particular instances that that was the case and prove that through evidence in a court in accordance with its authority, because it's important to recognize adulteration.
In a court, it couldn't prophylactically say, well, we have information that this salt is not salt. It's some other powdered substance that's really hazardous.
So, Your Honor, to answer that question, the way adulteration findings work under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act is FDA does an investigation. It makes a finding. Then the FDCA provides means for FDA to enforce that finding. One way is through bringing injunction proceedings in federal court. Another way is by seizing food and going to a court and asking for issuance of a libel. This is under sections 331 to 334 of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. So merely because FDA believes that something is adulterated doesn't mean that they can just jump to banning something. They have to use the authorities that Congress has provided, the scalpels, as we call them, to address the issue that they have identified.
You both at the beginning of your argument today and in your brief, you invoked the major question doctrine.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could you repeat that question?
Yeah, you invoked the major question doctrine.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, but, you know, that's applicable only when there's a statutory ambiguity. And I'm curious to know what it is. The district court said that the statute here, quote, grants the FDA authority to combat infectious diseases apart from the authority to set standards of identity. Quote, those authorities do not conflict. What's the ambiguity we're trying to resolve?
Well, Your Honor, if I may gently push back on the assumption that the major questions doctrine only applies when there's statutory ambiguity, I think that if you look at FDA versus Brown and Williamson, or if you look at the court's more recent decisions in the Alabama Realtors case or in the OSHA case, what the court makes clear is that if FDA or any agency wants to exert authority that touches upon a question of national importance, economically or politically, then you need a clear statement from Congress authorizing the agency to do that.
That's exactly why I asked the question. What's not clear here?
Well, what's not clear, Your Honor, is, and again, we're not arguing ambiguity. What we're saying is that the Butter Standards Act is clear. It says that butter can be made from milk or cream or both. It doesn't require a pasteurization mandate. And FDA cannot deviate from Congress's standard of identity any more than food producers can deviate from the standards of identity that FDA has promulgated using the FDCA.
What's major about the treatment of butter? I will say that when you think about the kinds of things for which that phraseology has been invoked, they seem broader in sweep than the treatment of butter.
Well, Your Honor, I think that there are two ways the court can approach that question. One way is to ask, how has Congress historically treated butter? And there's no dispute that on this record, from 1886 to 1902 to 1923, Congress passed a series of laws that have remained unamended in the intervening years, all addressed to regulating and protecting the sale of butter. So Congress itself, in a way, has said this is a major question of importance. And because it's so important, we are assuming the authority to regulate in this area when we could otherwise just delegate the question to the agency. So that, I think, by itself distinguishes butter. But then on top of that, if you look at the history of butter in America, it is a standard food staple. As many of the congressmen that we quote in our brief say, at points in time in this history, butter sales and butter purchases by consumers were second only to meat purchases in terms of their importance the American family, the American household, and on the American farm. So that's what makes it a question of nationwide importance. The fact that if just to put it bluntly, if FDA tomorrow were to just ban the sale of butter completely, I don't think that there's any question that the dairy industry would be suing the next day and saying you've ended a billion-dollar industry in the United States. So,
Mr. Subbaraman, I assume in that case you'd bring an arbitrary and capricious challenge, which reminds me that I have a question about your arbitrary and capricious challenge here. You have a separate question focused on that. But I take it that maybe it's not really a traditional arbitrary and capricious challenge, because I take your position principally to be that arbitrary and capricious review is inadequate as a safeguard here. That's really too toothless to prevent abuse of the FDA's powers. And so it, in a way, it's sort of a supporting argument for your statutory claim. Is that right?
That is a correct interpretation of our argument. And we're basing that on this court's analysis in the Genus case, where it made the same observation that FDA's attempt to defend an overreaching law by saying, well, don't worry, arbitrary and capricious review will be sufficient to address this issue. The court said, no, we're not going to rely on that standard alone when we have clear limitations being imposed by Congress. Your Honor, I see my time has expired, but I'm happy to answer any questions that the court may have, and I hope the court will afford me a little time for rebuttal.
We will give you a little time for rebuttal, Mr. Subbaraman. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Barmore, we'll hear from the government now.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Cynthia Barmore, here for the federal government. FDA's decision here rested on its independent authority under the Public Health Service Act to prevent the spread of communicable diseases. That power is not limited by restrictions on FDA's separate statutory authority to create standards, which address the different problem of ensuring the consumer expectations. McAfee did not present any compelling cause to FDA that would require it to change its regulations that for decades have prohibited the interstate sale of raw cream butter. I am happy to answer any questions this court has, but we are also.
So how do we distinguish pasteurization from a production method that would in fact have a bearing on the identity of food that's statutorily statutorily described?
So typically the types of production methods that may bear on the standard of identity would be in the cheese context, the way that a particular cheese is manufactured gives it its characteristics that consumers expect with something labeled, for example, cottage cheese. But I would like to note that standards of identity are fundamentally about labeling. So if you want to sell a product called a certain thing, you have to conform to the standard of identity for that. But you can quite easily just change the name of the product and then avoid the standard. And so that is why, fundamentally, we don't think that standards of identity pose any limitation on FDA's Public Health Service Act.
But, I mean, I think that's where you and appellant are kind of ships passing in the night, in the sense that they very much argue that unpasteurized butter or raw butter is a distinct product with a distinct market and distinct features, just like ricotta cheese might be different from cottage cheese, that there are different texture, smell, flavor, that consumers care about.
Your Honor, FDA did address similar arguments in 1987 when it undertook this rulemaking. So there was an argument made there that raw milk is a different product nutritionally, immunologically, and FDA evaluated those arguments and found no scientific basis for them. And McAfee hasn't challenged those types of arguments. Here, he made no argument to FDA below that butter's characteristics are different fundamentally when it's raw versus pasteurized. And so because he never made those arguments and they were specifically rejected by the agency in 1987, they really provide no basis here to consider this a different ingredient.
You said the FDA found no scientific basis. Is that what's necessary? Because I think their argument is it's important to people who consume it.
It may be important to some people who consume it. There is just no basis in science to say that there's a different nutritional property there. But again, I'd like to go back to what a standard of identity does. It really just requires that a product have a certain name if it's going to be sold as that product. It doesn't purport to constrain FDA's ability to ensure food safety, which is ultimately what most of the FDCA is aimed at, and is a public health service. There's no indication that Congress wanted to curtail FDA's ability to ensure food safety, even though it might want to change FDA's ability with respect to limited products like butter to match consumer expectations.
Can I ask you just to address the argument? And I don't know that it was featured in the briefing until the reply brief, but the argument about the adulteration statute?
Sure.
And so, if you can I just, I think there's something going on with the mic. Can you just slide over a little bit and it may be able to hear you a little more clearly?
Better? Can you hear me a little better now?
Yeah.
Much better. Yeah.
FDA has a number of overlapping authorities. Adulteration is one. Obviously here, FDA only relied on its Public Health Service Act authority. It didn't rely on its adulteration authority. But there are various ways that FDA could ensure food safety through adulteration, through standards of quantity and quality.
I thought it did invoke the adulteration authority as an alternative, no?
So this particular regulation is currently only supported by the Public Health Service Act. It's quite possible that, if that weren't adequate to support it, FDA could find support in the adulterations provisions for it, but currently it's only supported.
And are the processes there more onerous for the FDA?
I think that, FDA identified, so there's nothing in the record to say exactly why they chose one over the other. I think probably it's just seen as a more straightforward way to regulate under the Public Health Service Act in this type of situation where you so clearly have a necessity to address a community. I would note under the adulterations provisions, you don't always need to have a finding that a specific product is adulterated or contaminated. So under 342A4, that refers to products that have been prepared, packed, or held under insanitary conditions, whereby it may have become contaminated or rendered injurious to health. You also have 371A, which generally gives the FDA ability to enact regulations that are necessary for the efficient enforcement of the FDA. And so you might have like a prophylactic type of regulation there, where this type of regulation, where it's quite difficult in sometimes to test dairy products to determine that a specific product is contaminated. And so to efficiently enforce, even the A1 provision, you may have a necessity of this type of prophylactic.
Could you just restate for us in simple terms the distinction between the permissibility of cheeses made with raw milk and the impermissibility of butter with raw milk?
So in 1950, when FDA addressed cheese, it looked at the data and it found that cheese that had been held under a 60-day aging period had no incidence of foodborne illness. And so it determined, based on the evidence for cheese specifically, that an aging process provided an alternative for pasteurization that just as effectively protected human health. It did not find any similar alternative for butter. I would also note that McAfee didn't present an alternative that would similarly provide an alternative that would safely protect. If there are no further questions, we would urge this court to affirm the district.
Thank you, Ms. Farmore. Mr. Subbaraman, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to devote my time here principally to addressing, I think, the main argument that FDA has presented to you, which is that the standard of identity is just about labeling and has nothing to do with food safety whatsoever. That argument is simply false. Now, counsel just mentioned FDA's regulations, the 60-day aging period for raw milk cheeses. That is promulgated as a standard of identity for cheese. Now, if FDA is correct that standards of identity have nothing to do with food safety and products can be sold that don't conform to the standard of identity just under a different label, then that food safety standard that has stood for 60, 70 years can now be abrogated by any food producer who can say, well, I'm going to sell cheese that's been only aged for 15 days or not aged at all because I'm selling it under a different label. That's their argument. If standards of identity are just about labeling, and if you change the labeling, you can buy your way out of what a standard of identity says, then standard of identity becomes meaningless, at least as a means of protecting food safety, which is how FDA used it for raw milk cheeses, and which is how they are trying to use it for butter, except for the fact that Congress has said you can't use it that way for butter. The other point I want to make on this is I encourage the court, look at Quaker Oats case, look at 62 jars of jam. They may be funnily named cases, but those cases are the Supreme Court's authoritative interpretation of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and standards of identity. And what the Supreme Court says in those cases is that when FDA dictates an ingredient requirement, when it says a food cannot be sold unless it's made of X, Y, and Z, then that is conclusive. And it doesn't matter what the purpose of the standard is. It doesn't matter that it's about a manufacturing process versus ingredient. If they're saying this is what the food has to contain, then that's a standard of identity. And that's exactly what the regulation FDA has promulgated here says. It says that butter has to be made from pasteurized dairy ingredients. And that's as far as this court's decision has to go in addressing this issue, unless the court has any questions.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.